Good afternoon. It is 12:30. We are in studio with Kevin. Just getting ourselves set up for a fantastic live broadcast show here on CKMS 102.7 FM, Rogers Digital 946, and worldwide at radiowaterloo.ca. We're going to get the Facebook Live going. In the meantime, I'm going to play you a sneak preview of our guest. Here is a just-released single from Heather Valley, and this is called Love Joy on In Studio with Kevin. In studio with Kevin, and we are live with Heather Valley. Welcome, Heather.
Thanks, Kevin. It's great to be here.
And does Kevin know how to operate? Say hi to me again.
Hi, Kevin.
All right. There we go. I think we have some better levels. We just heard your first single called Lovejoy. This just came out, correct?
That's right. It just came out on Sunday.
That is so cool. And here you are on my show. I'm lucky beyond belief because I think the press release came out, what, Wednesday?
I
got it anyways. Right. Wednesday, a couple of emails. You're here live in the flesh. That's a fantastic. Thank you. So Heather Valley, so welcome. And let's make sure, and let's tell the folks, if you're listening on the radio, we are also on Facebook Live, so you can go to My Audio Face Facebook page to pick up that feed. And let's see if I can remember the right camera. I'm going to do it right the first time.
There we are.
But is that the one we wanted?
I think so.
Yeah, or was it this one? Oh dear, it wasn't that one. No, I was right the first time. There we go. So there's Heather. Awesome.
You've got to trust your intuition.
I know, but it's a long story. I've got another button thing I'm doing that I'm always like, is it that one? And then I do the wrong one. So thank you. So what, maybe just very quick background on where you're from. And well, where are you from?
I'm from Northern Ontario, originally.
Okay. Which part do we want to say? Does
we'll
anybody
say
know?
Yeah.
The very far north?
Is very it? Near north, actually.
Near north, okay.
Yeah, so I'm from the North Bay area, originally.
Oh, okay.
But I've lived down here between Guelph, London, and the Hamilton area for about 10, 15 years at this point.
Okay. And I'm a little flummoxed because I'm not quite sure where to start, so I guess we'll just start with your story, which is quite fascinating. That your music career literally just started less than a year ago? Is that correct?
Yeah, I've been playing out since January. I've been finishing songs that I actually felt comfortable bringing out and playing in front of people just since the fall.
Which is brand new, and you already have a single out. It's on iTunes, it's on all the digital platforms,
yep.
And it's called Lovejoy. Obviously begs the question, and I'll leave it to you to start where you'd like to start.
Mm-hmm.
You were a lawyer practicing law in courtrooms just prior to this.
That's right.
So take us from there to here.
So I practiced law regionally for about 5 years between my articling internship and the period of time that I was an associate lawyer. And I really enjoyed it in a lot of ways, but ultimately the stress of that career became too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was very long hours. It was very difficult to have a work-life balance in terms of an outlet for creativity.
Mm.
And a number of things happened that just kind of began to cascade and made it really difficult for me to continue with my old life as it was. I had had a tragedy that happened right at the very beginning of my associate time, which was that my grandfather on my Italian side had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And because of how busy I was with work, I really didn't have the time to properly grieve that.
Wow.
And a few relationships that didn't work out, and then one particularly difficult to even conceive of circumstance happened, where I met a person who turned out to be a con man. And it was very challenging to get him out of my life.
Wow.
Now, the con was primarily emotional.
Okay.
But the story itself is insane. And Lovejoy is actually about that in part. So these things were occurring in my personal life. None of it was impacting my performance in the courtroom or with clients,
mm-hmm.
but it was just starting to loom over me, I would say. Then in January of last year, my mentor, who I was very close with at my workplace, suddenly passed away.
Oh my goodness.
And in the months that followed that, with the reorganizing of things that happened at work and with managing the rest of the traumas that I had gone through in the preceding several years, I just got to a stage where I was incapable of thought. And that was the day. It just all hit me at once in the middle of August of last year. I couldn't think properly. I felt like I was walking underwater. I had to attend court that morning, so I attended. It was a very typical type of scheduling appearance.
Okay.
But I realized that I wasn't myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I walked out, went to see my doctor, and my doctor ultimately told me, you can't go back. So I was in this position where I was used to working 12-hour days. I was used to completing 1,000 tasks a day, talking to countless people on the phone, in my office, in the community, engaged in community volunteerism at the same time. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the concept of having one telephone conversation to arrange an appointment for days or weeks later was so, it was such a task that it was almost impossible. So it took me, I would say, probably 4 or 5 months to get out of the full fog. But during that fog, I started writing again. And I had sort of played guitar. I taught myself how to play from tabs on the internet. I was always a little bit unconfident about it because of that, because I didn't have like proper training. And I don't think I had enough life experience to finally put into words things that I thought were worth sharing with people.
Okay.
But after all of this, after having that life experience for 5 years, 8 or more actually in terms of training as well, there were a lot of things that I wanted to tell people about and to share and to sort of stress for people, hopefully, that they're not alone.
Right.
Because one thing I've really noticed in dealing with this is I've been very open and honest with people when they've talked to me about what's going on in my life. And my vulnerability has then caused them to feel comfortable to be vulnerable with me.
Right.
And so many people have shared, and these are people who are close and people who I've just met, they've shared things about their lives that made me realize that this is a lot more common than most of us feel comfortable admitting to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it sounds like the busyness of your career and your professional work, in a sense, is it fair to say that it was not so much a way for you to cope with what's going on, but it's what allowed you to keep going through the tragedies and the difficulties as they were occurring? Was it just a way, like, was it an escape almost? Is that what it, and I'm asking sort of in hindsight now that you look back on it, is that how you see it now, or what did it feel like when you're actually in the throes of the work?
I was good enough at compartmentalizing that if you look back at it now, it did offer an escape. Because I couldn't think about anything else when I was concerned for my clients' cases when I was working as a lawyer. So that would leave me with just enough time to hopefully have something to eat and go to bed and then start all over again the next day.
Right.
So I didn't have time to process anything that had occurred. And since I was so busy, I was so isolated that it was easy for that one person in particular to continue to have access to me. Because he was someone that I knew already, as opposed to putting myself out there and meeting other people.
Right. Okay. So it was sort of a combination of events. And also I'm assuming that any other interactions you may have had with family or previous friends and things like that would have been limited by you being so busy and maybe not wanting to get into everything, knowing you're not going to have the time maybe with family. And so therefore you're kind of not sharing at all. Like if I was, from the sense I get, if I had been working next to you or had observed you, I would have had no clue anything was going on.
There were only a few people who knew little bits and pieces, but nobody knew because I was still productive.
Right, and that I think I emphasize that a bit because I think that's something that is very hard for people that haven't been in a situation like yours to grasp that from a productivity point of view, or many of the ways that we look at people from the outside, that they're able to work, they appear to be perfectly functional, appear to be happy or at least content, therefore there cannot be anything wrong. And I think it's a big thing for you to bring up and that people understand that the two don't necessarily exclude each other. You could have all kinds of things going on and be able to, like you said, perform, and you were able to get your job done, but sounds like nothing else, right? It, from a life point of view.
Yeah, I think it's really helpful that you sort of tease that out, because really that's a very good summary of what I was dealing with. Mm. And I think also why people from the outside perhaps weren't concerned at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because as well, like the way that our society is set up, if you have a good professional job, then a lot of the time people will say that that's a marker of success. But from my perspective, I mean, I was not successful, and I'm putting that in scare quotes here, from an emotional standpoint. I wasn't doing the self-care work that I needed from a health standpoint, from a mental health standpoint, and from a love yourself standpoint. And it put me in a place where I kept finding myself dealing with these emotional struggles. And really, I mean, the job was great, but it wasn't enough to make me feel fully fulfilled when those things were missing. So I kept telling myself, hold on, hold on, hold on. And I got to a point where I couldn't hold on. I had actually gone for a vacation and gone down to Nashville and seen one of my heroes of music, Gillian Welch and Dave Rawlings play at the Ryman Auditorium. It was an amazing once-in-a-lifetime experience. And I thought that it was going to be enough to give me that infusion of music and creativity to let me get through the next X period of time.
This is while you were still at work?
That's right.
You're just on vacation. Did you go, did you go by yourself?
I went with a friend.
Okay. So this was a basically an escape, like, oh, let me go recharge my batteries.
That was the intention.
And what actually happened, though?
You know, I was feeling anxiety, and it was getting worse and worse and worse. And it culminated the first day back. I didn't feel like I had rested. I didn't feel like I could sleep. A really strange thing about anxiety, particularly clinical anxiety, is it manifests in different ways for different people, and sometimes in ways that you would never have expected. I found that I wasn't breathing. I would actually have to think about taking breaths. I would wake up out of sleep gasping for breath.
Wow.
And I was worried that I had, you know, damaged my lungs or something, because it seemed like it was legitimately a physical problem from doing some renovations or something like this. So I spoke to my doctor about it, and she said, no, no, that's anxiety.
Okay.
Another thing was hypersensitivity to sound and vibration. I could feel the street, like the cars driving in front of my house, and I lived on a fairly busy street, and I couldn't get a full night's sleep. So all of this culminated that Monday back from that vacation, where I felt like I was walking through water. I couldn't focus. No amount of caffeine could wake me up. I realized that something was wrong and that I really had to change. I couldn't hold on anymore.
Wow, that's something. I want to ask you a little bit more about the, I guess the story behind Lovejoy. Would you prefer to play a song? Do you want to play that song? Is that one of the songs you were hoping to play?
Sure. I know that you played the track, the recorded track, but I can play it live here.
Absolutely. That'd be awesome. And then we can talk about it. So this is Lovejoy from Heather Valley.
Thank you.
open sheep's clothing.
Clamped here. I'd love to clap. I cannot clap. I won't say why. But that was fantastic, Heather. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
So many questions. So first, I guess, musically speaking, you mentioned you just taught, you had been playing, I guess, with the guitar a little bit before, just for your personal interest type of thing. Like, would you play guitar for yourself prior?
Yeah, mainly. I mean, I taught myself how to play when I was in college.
Which is pretty amazing to start with. But what about the singing? Were you singing along then?
I started singing along, but it took me a while to actually sort of develop my voice to a point where I felt like it was expressing what I wanted to express. That's only very recent.
Okay.
But, you know, even while I was working, the small bits and pieces of time that I would have to focus on guitar, I'd occasionally learn a cover, record the cover, put it up on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
So there are some covers that are up there from the preceding period. But I was having a very difficult time actually finishing songs. Lovejoy is actually one of the only songs that I finished while I was working that I still play now. There are only two.
Okay, so this song you had been sort of writing, mm-hmm. And this song you wrote prior to while you were still full-time.
Yeah, that's right.
In legal, as a lawyer. And obviously this is the story of the con man that you fell in love with.
That's right. It's a little part of it anyway.
A part, well, yeah. And yeah, just some pieces I could hear, and I guess, you know, like all songs you imagine and visualize. Do you want to tell us a bit more, share what you'd like? I have a million questions, but what happened?
So, insofar as Lovejoy is concerned, mm-hmm. it's about the second time that I saw him.
Okay.
So he was from the States. He was actually from Florida.
Okay.
We met online, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Not surprising, but in an odd way. He had actually found one of my covers on YouTube.
Okay.
And then messaged me to ask me if I had more in a certain style, and we got to talking,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and he told me a certain version of his life that turned out not to be true, but based on those ideas that
But at the time, it sounded like, oh, I found a soulmate or somebody I can connect with.
Yeah, it started to feel that way anyway.
Yeah.
It was a person that I was got
friendship.
Along with. Yeah,
yeah,
it was a friendship initially.
Yeah.
So we ended up seeing each other for a week and started a relationship. And then, as often happens, when you see a person in person, and when you see a person for a longer period of time, you start to see through their actions what is true as opposed to what they told you.
Right.
So he would sort of fall in and out of contact with me and had developed this very sad story that I had sympathy for, that he was challenged with alcoholism,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to be supportive of him, and he had initially suggested that this was a historical battle, but it became, I think, a very convenient excuse for him when he would fall in and out of contact, but this is the reason why.
Okay, so it could be you, it helped yeah. explain any of the behaviors that otherwise to you were maybe red flags, and this tamped it back down.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, it was in and of itself somewhat of a concern, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the personality was the most important thing to me, and I wanted to be supportive of him. And so I was in the times that he was in contact, but then he would disappear. And what happened with Lovejoy is he reappeared, and he asked me to come to meet him in Buffalo.
Okay.
And at first I was very resistant and didn't want to do that because he had been too destabilizing to me anyway, emotionally. But I'm a romantic at heart, and so eventually, after many invitations, I finally agreed to go and see him.
Okay.
And he was staying in a neighborhood in Buffalo. So for those of you who are familiar with Buffalo, it is one of the roughest neighborhoods there, mm-hmm. which is ironically named Lovejoy.
Okay.
And he was staying at a rooming house called the Moreland.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So in the song, when I say, I drove down to Lovejoy, slow death around me, took the border at the City of Light, which is a reference to Buffalo, I would have done anything that night. And I turned onto Moreland, saw you as I came around, emerging out of yellow light in your old Levi's. That's the description of what happened that night.
Wow, wow.
And I mean, I don't know for certain that the gifts that he gave me that I sing about in the chorus were mm-hmm. stolen, but I'm quite certain that they were.
Right.
Because as time passed, it became apparent that one of his cons was to convince women that he was in love with them, move in with them very quickly with a number of excuses so that they felt it was legitimate and not that they were being taken advantage of. And then for almost all of them, he would depart after already having started a relationship with someone else to go and live with her and steal things from them to fund his lifestyle on his way out the door.
Oh my goodness.
So I actually connected with some of these women after the fact and pieced together that this was his thing.
And now thankfully, you didn't actually move in with him.
Didn't move in with him, but okay. He did come up to Canada to visit.
Okay.
For a period.
So he stayed with you?
He stayed with me for a little while, starting at this Buffalo trip.
Okay.
So Buffalo, he lived there for several months, and then he came up to visit. And very shortly after he came up to visit, I found out about the cheating. That was when I finally saw the type of person that he was.
Okay.
I saw through the sob stories, I saw through this constant victimhood that he would describe as though it were completely out of his hands and he was just this person with the worst guilt, or the worst luck, I should
mm-hmm.
say.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't anything I could do because he didn't want to be helped. This was just who he was.
Right.
Now, one of the most interesting things, and a little bit of cosmic justice in the story, is that after I found out about this, obviously things did not work out, and I wanted to ensure that he wasn't anywhere close to me.
Okay.
So he tried to get a flight back down to Florida.
Okay.
And he needed to get a ride to the airport. Long story short, just to ensure that he was out of my life, I agreed to drive him there. So
wow.
I drove him to the airport in Buffalo. He had planned his flight for 7 a.m., so I had to go in the middle of the night and morning. And people who have been in abusive relationships, it'll be familiar to them that he would do what he could so that I couldn't sleep.
Okay.
This was over Christmas break, too, so
I was
off work for this period of time. But anyhow, he planned his departure to be in the early morning, so I would have to drive him midway through the night and not be able to think clearly.
Right, okay.
So we got to the border, and we got stalled as soon as he gives his passport to the border guard. He got arrested at the border in front of me because he was a fugitive from justice.
Okay.
And our Canadian border security hadn't picked that up. Like, they didn't have access to the NCIS database when he came into Canada.
Okay.
But the U.S. guards had access.
Okay.
And basically flagged him, and he got arrested in front of me. I had no idea what for. I had to look it up afterward because
Oh, so
I was
they don't
curious.
Tell you anything? Like,
I think that they might have mentioned it to him. I mean,
but yeah, and
they
so
didn't
did
tell me.
Okay, and basically, so you turned around at that point and went home, and
yeah, they like ran my info, and nothing had ever come up. I mean,
okay,
you know, I've lived a pretty straight and narrow life.
Well, we know all lawyers are perfect, right?
Well,
Michael Cohen accepted. But at that point, so you were middle of the night, or yeah, you're like hoping at that point, I'm guessing, to remove this person from your life and sort of get a finality of get on the plane and get out of my life.
Mm-hmm.
It happened, but in not the way you expected, and that you left him in the hands of justice at the border and came back. And did you ever see him after that?
He tried to contact me many, many times after that. He's now back in jail the second time.
Okay.
And
in the U.S.
In the U.S., yeah. And it's, you know, theft basically is what it all comes down to be able to fund a lifestyle without actually working.
Okay.
It's nothing more serious than that from as far as I'm aware, but I can't imagine living a life of conning people and stealing things in order to make ends meet.
Yeah, and we're not, I mean, maybe from a crime perspective it doesn't sound like much theft, but I mean we're talking about people's lives that are being, you know,
mm-hmm.
Impacted. Now, you're still working through all this when that happened.
That's right.
And so how much, what did you, like in the immediate aftermath, you went back to work, and was work your sort of temporary solution, or I mean?
Yeah, well, I was good at what I did.
Right.
It was easy for me to throw myself completely into it and focus on solving other people's problems.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, it got to a point ultimately after doing this for 4 or 5 years where I started to realize I needed to focus on solving my own problems as opposed to fixing everyone else's. But it was a salve at that point. It was really nice to be able to just turn my mind off from that and
mm-hmm.
focus just on what was in front of me and getting like the results that my clients wanted ultimately. But it was still there simmering in the background and had to come out. I mean, I wrote this song 9 months after that happened.
Okay.
It took me that long to wrap my mind around it and to really accept what it was that happened, because when I tell the story now, it's a narrative that has an arc, that has a sort of logic to it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the experience myself, when you want to give a person the benefit of the doubt, and when they're a very charismatic person and very good at lying as well,
mm-hmm.
the red flags look like pink flags. And I'm also hearing in one ear, you know, how much he loved me all the time, which, you know, didn't match up with the way that he behaved. But I didn't know most of that was happening at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I really just thought that it was this, you know, sad story that we could fix.
Right.
But you can't fix somebody.
Right, which is, yeah, it's I mean, the complexity and the clarity that you're able to share this is really quite incredible, and I think that's one of the great things, and it comes through with your music, which I think is what you're finding must resonate when you're out there and must give you an awful lot of validation, or, you know, I don't know if that's the right word, but when you're out in front of the audience, I know, I would assume not everybody is kind of like looking for the whole, okay, tell me your entire story through song and let me relate to it quite so literally, but I mean, I think there's definitely a genuineness and an authenticity that comes out. And you've now, so you've released the single and you're preparing to, and you released it on your own, so this is all done independently.
Yeah, that's right.
And you're planning an entire album to come out. Is that, is there a timeline, or is that sort of a work in progress?
It's a work in progress right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been working in a studio in Cincinnati.
Okay.
So that was where Lovejoy was recorded. I have another single that's going to be coming out in the next couple of months.
Okay.
And a couple of other songs that are almost done, but it's just going to be continuing to sort of add to that and work on that until I have, you know, the right songs and the right collection of songs to release as an album.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And you're playing quite a bit. You're performing like all the time. Is that, well, I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah. Well, it, compared to before.
I guess. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, because you played last night.
When did I play last?
I think it was
Sunday night.
Sunday? Okay.
Yeah. So Sunday was at the Cornerstone in Guelph, and that was an awesome show.
Okay.
Greg Denton opened, and Corey Mercer, who is a singer-songwriter from Brantford, Hamilton, also opened. We had a ton of people out. It was wonderful. And the next one is going to be tomorrow night at the Danish Place in Puss Lynch.
Okay, so very close by. So the Danish Place, and that's tomorrow, which would be Saturday, correct? We're Friday. Yeah, Saturday, May the 5th.
May the 5th, Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo, okay.
I think it's traditional to eat Danish food on Cinco de Mayo.
Sure, okay. That sounds about right, yeah. Danishes, maybe, I don't know. And what about after that? Is there other? Do you have other shows scheduled?
Yeah, I do. I've got May 25th, I believe it is going to be at Paris Surf. So first I should say, the Danish Place tomorrow, I'm going to be playing along with Chantal Stone.
Okay.
And we're playing from 5:30 until 8:30. So if anybody has been curious or is thinking, where is this place, if they haven't heard of it, it's in a setting called the Sunset Villa.
Okay.
Which is a Danish cultural community in the middle of the countryside just south of the 401.
I think I know that place. Yeah, it's a... Yes, I have a story about that place that I'm not going to share. but I think I know exactly where that is. So that's going to be great. And that's... Mm-hmm. So now folks, they can just show up, right?
Yeah,
it's open for everyone. Is it all ages or is it a...
It's all ages. It's a family restaurant.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
They've just done a fantastic renovation. It's gorgeous there. And it's in a very beautiful parkland setting as well. So it's just really nice to get out. Their food is delicious. And they've just started adding local music, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to ensure that you can get a reservation, you should probably call in and get one because they do get pretty busy. But if you have a chance to get out, you should get out.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
May 25th is going to be at Paris Surf from 7 to 9 p.m. And that's a clothing store and a pizza place in the heart of Paris.
In Paris, Ontario.
Yeah.
Okay. Wonderful. And if folks want to kind of keep up with the latest, which of your social medias or websites, where's the one place you want them to go?
I would love for people to go on Facebook and to look up Heather Valley Music and like and join that page. I'm really active on Facebook and on Instagram, but
mm-hmm.
Facebook is ideal because if everybody can primarily congregate there, then I know that I can focus my attention on announcements there.
Mm-hmm.
But you can find me there, Heather Valley Music on Facebook. I'm Heather _Valley_Music on Instagram.
Okay.
And as you were saying, Kevin, Lovejoy is on all platforms, so all major distribution. So you should be able to find it on, well, I have it on YouTube, Amazon Play, Google Music, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud,
mm-hmm.
everything.
I've already got it. I can. We just heard it through Apple Music, so it's absolutely in the iTunes store, and that's fantastic. And I have to mention to you. You clearly haven't heard, being from the country a little bit, but I was told Facebook is for old people, so I'm not sure if you're supposed to be on there, Heather. But I say that, of course, in jest. So Heather Valley Music, but you are Facebook, Heather Valley Music, Heather _Valley_Music is Instagram, and you also post on YouTube
for
the music and the single Lovejoy on iTunes, Spotify, and the other platforms. But the Facebook, it's funny because I do hear that. Some people say that, but I'm curious to hear your take in terms of building a community of supporters and fans and whatnot. I'm assuming you're finding Facebook to be the best or easiest to cover everything you want to do. Is that why you're there?
Yeah, I'm really liking Facebook. I mean, I like Instagram as well, but I think it's easier to create a group on Facebook, at least in my experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I've had really good response. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm not going to judge any of the platforms, but I'll go where the people are.
Exactly. And I do ask that because it's a common point of discussion. I found the same thing. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook are sort of the three that I best understand and lend themselves to, I think, music or, building communities. But definitely Facebook just easily allows for events and things like that. Instagram is a little, is a lot easier to use, but it's very focused, and it wouldn't be, I don't know, if that was your only source of info, I think it sometimes gets overwhelming. If you have a bunch of info you want to share, it's just more too many pictures, at least that's my view.
Yeah, that's been my experience too. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you see an event being advertised on Instagram, you have to then do the work to put it in your calendar and remind yourself. And I think that Facebook, I mean, for all of the criticisms it's been getting, especially lately, from the perspective of event organizing, it's really easy for me on my end.
Yeah.
Make an event and invite people. And then as an event attendee, because I go out to see music quite a lot and other events and so on, it's really nice to have those reminders. And even though it's a bit big brothery, it's sort of nice to see where my friends are going.
I think it's got a ton of functionality. I think it's one of the better ones for sure. I want to ask you as well, Heather, how much, how important is it to you that you use your music and your performing to do sort of what you alluded to at the beginning, is let people know they're not alone, to help them out? Is that a big piece for you? And how does that sort of, how does that translate? Is it?
Isolated that years ago as the reason why I was drawn to music. I was very shy when I first picked up a guitar. I couldn't have ever imagined getting on a stage and playing in front of people. I could barely play in front of, say, you and I in this room here.
Okay.
I would have had a very difficult time doing that. But I kept feeling compelled to write songs or to learn the covers and then to record them and put them on YouTube. And I got a good response from people in certain fan communities, commentary about how that rendition of the song made them feel something.
Okay.
And that was what I was aiming for, making people feel less alone. I feel like that's one of the most useful things that we can do in this world where we're ever more connected and yet feeling ever more isolated. You know, and you see it so much, especially in groups of people who are in their 20s and 30s, like the explosion of nihilism has just been breathtaking. And I felt that too. So anything that we can do to help each other feel like we're part of a community and to create a space for that community, I feel like that is just a very noble thing. So hopefully, I mean, obviously art, music, it's self-expression. I do this as a form of therapy for myself and sort of processing things that I've been through and trying to create something beautiful out of something that was perhaps less than beautiful when I experienced it.
Right.
But it's always close to mind thinking about that.
Yeah. How have your former colleagues in both where you work, but just in your industry overall, are you in touch with a lot of them, and how is the, I guess, reactions?
Well, I think that they were a bit worried about me at the beginning. I mean, I didn't even really know what was going on with me when I left.
Okay.
And as I've been in recovery, is kind of how I've seen it, I've felt stronger about myself, about my decisions, about what I need in life. And that has faded, so that concern is gone, and I've had a lot of support. So that's really been beautiful. I mean, I think people realize you really only get time. That's all that we have for certain, this time that we have right now.
Right.
So you have to find a path in your life that is going to lead to contentment, if not happiness. And if things aren't working for you for whatever reason, you have to make changes. So that's really sort of the message that I've gotten from my former colleagues. And a lot of people are really, you know, happy to see what I'm making, which makes me feel like I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You know?
It's really breathtaking, to be honest. If I didn't know the story, there's no way I would think, okay, this person just picked up a guitar and just started recording a short period ago. You're totally at ease. I mean, you're beautiful music and you're talented and the songs sound great. But beyond that is just this comfort. It's as if, kind of as if you've always done this, which is probably, I don't know if that's how it feels for you, that like, you can you picture yourself still like in a courtroom and go, yeah, that's me and this is me, or do you see that was me?
It feels like that was me.
Okay.
I mean, it was a really cool job.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong. It was a very cool job. It was really important to me to be able to help people. And mm-hmm. I feel like I did in a lot of circumstances. And it was really interesting to learn the skills to be able to advocate and to be on your toes. It was harder in a lot of ways to be in front of a judge and to not know what question was coming and to have to have an answer ready that was based on the facts and on the law and to know it inside out. Where here, it's challenging in a different way. You know, I'm not necessarily improvising and mm-hmm. playing songs that I've written before, but it's very emotional. It's very, you make yourself very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
When you're vulnerable, you're open to being hurt. But that's also where you get to have like the strongest connection with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I still can see the old lawyer Heather.
Yeah.
I sort of see her as like a version of me, but that's a person that's in the past right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would you like to play another song?
I would love to.
Okay.
Okay, so this song is called Blackberry Bush. And it's about going back in time and wishing that I could have seen the future at that point.
Yeah.
Thank you, Heather. That was Heather Valley live on In Studio with Kevin here on CKMS 102.7 FM, Rogers Digital 946, and worldwide, radiowaterloo.ca. And the song was called Blackberry Bush?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And you said it's about... That was an interesting thing you said. Re-say it.
It was about going back in time and wishing that you could tell the future.
That's a very that's something I can relate to quite well. That's a neat concept. How did you come up with that? What prompted that idea turning that into a song?
Well, I mean, sometimes it defies logic, right? It's not really a logical thing.
Mm-hmm.
I started writing the first two verses not exactly knowing what I was writing about, but hitting on that image of the blackberry itself, like the blackberry bush, and it brought me back to this time when I went to Victoria to visit my best friend from high school who had moved out there.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm describing there is essentially the week that I spent with her.
Okay.
And it's interesting to think back on it now and to know where life took her and where life took me. And I guess some of the sentiment is, you know, what would you do differently if you could go back? Would you go back?
Mm.
Would you go back if the other person wasn't there? That's the question I ask at the end of the song.
Mm. Wow. That's incredible. I have to thank you so much. It's such an experience. I literally, probably two different times now, I've had goosebumps on the back of my neck to be able to sit. And it's something I've only recently been able to do. So in a sense, I was most able to do it with you was really enjoy and just experience what you're doing. It's such a privilege. I've had other guests in the past, but I was a little too new and a little too focused on a bunch of other stuff that I quite frankly could pay very little attention to them. I'm glad that in most cases I've got it recorded so I could listen again, but in some cases I'm like, you know, I go, oh, I had this band and they played this song, and I'm like, and I was there obviously, but I don't have much of a memory of the experience, whereas I was able to just soak in everything, and it's incredible. It's the passion's the right word, the emotion, I think, is what I want to say, just that comes out is just, it's gorgeous. Really is. So thank you so much for sharing that. We have 5 minutes left in our time together. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
You know, I would love to sing you one last song.
Okay.
If I
that
could.
Would be, oh, that would, I would be honored. Absolutely.
So this is, I mentioned earlier in the interview that there were two songs that I actually finished before I changed my life. And
mm-hmm.
was able to start accessing those experiences and to write from them. This is one of them. And this song I actually wrote with that con man. So he contributed to the chord structure of the song.
Okay.
So I wrote it. And it's about that situation as well. And it's called Troller.
Okay.
So without further ado, I'll play. And it's going to be a little softer because I don't play it with a pick. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. That was fantastic. I got rid of my mic, but that's okay. I talk so loud, it's going to pick up anyways. That was fantastic. I'll steal yours for our last bit, but thank you so much. I really appreciate it. This has been CKMS. This has been on CKMS. This has been in studio with Kevin on CKMS with Heather Valley, and you're playing tomorrow. Tell us again where.
Tomorrow I'm at the Danish Place in Puslinch, and I'm there from 5:30 until 8:30 p.m. You should come out and have dinner with us.
Great. Thank you so much. Everybody have a great afternoon.